Welcome to All Road 65 Max Radio, where the road ahead gets brighter as we journey towards truth, traveling through our dreams and an inspiration into a new reality. It's time, and your ticket is waiting. All Roads Lead 65 Max Radio with Pamela Henderson.
Greetings. Thank you for joining me on BBS Radio, All Roads 65 Max Radio. I am your host, Pamela L. Henderson. Established in 2011, my focus is my mission statement: to help create a quality of life through social growth, inspiring jewels to become leaders by establishing partnerships with corporations, entrepreneurs, donors, sponsors, volunteers, the community, and abroad. Please join me every other Tuesday at noon on BBS Radio, All Roads 65 Max, and follow me at allroads65max.org. My special guest today is Mr. David Wilson, author of the book Blood Fake, who said he used a pen name for his book to protect the guilty. Also, he did not want a troubled veteran to pursue him and cause trouble for himself. Mr. Wilson wants people to be horrified by the story, and he wants to accomplish three things. First, he wants to educate the general public. Second, he wants to amend or add to the Stolen Valor Act of 2013 so that it includes cases like his sister's. And third, he wants to demonstrate how his Christian faith helped him overcome anger, hatred through forgiveness. At last, I want to say thank you for joining me and giving me this interview chance, Mr. Wilson, and welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
How you doing?
I'm doing well.
You're looking good. How's the weather out there?
It's getting a little stormy. I'm over on the, I don't want to say East Coast. I keep the names and locations of everything about the book, you know, is different. So it's wider than just the pen name. I'm trying to protect a lot of people, even though I was told I didn't have to because I'm speaking truth and I can prove it. I still think it was the better way to go. It turned into a bigger calling.
So before we get into the book, because I have a lot of questions, tell me a little bit about your journey and how did you determine that you needed to write this book? Because it's very inspiring. And when I had read a little bit of your bio and just imagining how things have taken a left and the things that you went through, it was a little heartfelt, I must say.
Well, first and foremost, I love my sister. She's a good person. And when I last visited her in the early fall of 2011, she was radiant. She had just gotten married about a year or so before, and she was just beautiful. And that's kind of where the story starts to unfold, but I just want to answer that question.
Okay.
I was happy for her because she was so happy. She had, you know, a difficult thing in her life that she had to deal with was an accident with her daughter, my niece, in 1995, where my niece was killed. So my sister fought through an awful lot of pain with a relationship also at the time, a husband at that time, with the loss of her daughter. So I was always kind of tried to be a little protective of her. So I was trying to be happy for her when she was in this new relationship, this new marriage that I had concerns about that'll come out a little bit later.
Right. Okay. So tell me about the book, A Stolen Valor, and the meaning of Blood Fake.
Well, I was surprised when I started talking about this that a lot of people didn't know what stolen valor was or is. And I can define that for you and very simply. It's when someone engages in a story about an act of military heroism to raise their own self to be bigger than it is. It could happen, non-vets can do it, or veterans can do it. I believe it's worse than when veterans do it because they understand what stolen valor truly means, and they wouldn't do that to degrade the act of stolen valor from our true military heroes. So that's a part of that question. What was the second part?
Well, I was asking about the meaning of blood fake.
Okay. Well, blood fake is basically what it is. It's a story about an act of military heroism that there was no blood. There was no blood. So I gave it the name blood fake. And then underneath I'll show you the cover of the book after. I have a baby blue pop gun that I
Yes.
don't see them anymore, but I remember we had them when I was kids. So we're going back into the 60s. I remember those pop guns, and it was a little cork in the end of it, and you pull the trigger and the cork popped out of it. So basically, I'm telling a story that it's almost like a cartoon. It never happened, and I can prove why it never happened when we get into that subject matter.
Yes. Mr. Wilson, what is the core message you want readers to take away when they purchase your book?
Well, the education, educating the public is a big issue with me because, like I said, a lot of people don't know what it is, and it's very dangerous. When I tell my sisters is kind of the epitome of stolen valor. It is the highest level of stolen valor because how he used it against my sister. And like there's a major power issue here with stolen valor. It's generally men targeting women. And I know there's other power structures to look at, with different kinds of relationships, gay relationship, LGBTQ, but I can only focus on what I know of my sister and what I know of stolen valor. It's generally how a male will use it against a targeted female. So I want to, educate people more on what that looks like, even the lesser of the evils, but I want to show that range of what stolen valor can look like so people can be aware of it. The other part is the Stolen Valor Act of 2013. It really, most of the act focuses on financial gain, and they will go after financial gain more than cases of emotional abuse. And my stand is, look at my case and look what happened to my sister. So it doesn't get worse than somebody killing themselves over something. Like this to me is you put a dollar amount on it, $1,000, $10,000, $100,000. It's far more serious than if it was just financial. And he did steal from her. He did gain financially, and he's gained financially prior to my sister. And he is still, he just doubled down after the loss of my sister, and I'll tell you that story after. But it's worth far more than a money issue. And I want them to include cases like my sister's, that it's so egregious they have to try to look at this and prosecute. Then the third part was my Christian walk. I was very hypocritical for about 3.5 years. I was a very angry man. I was trying to write the book, and I was grieving, and I was visualizing myself hurting him. He's from our neighborhood. We were friends with his older brothers. We knew the whole family.
Wow.
We knew he was a little odd, and then I started hearing more stories about him after I started asking people about him. But I was. I believe I'm a good Christian man, and this had taken me so far backward that I was hurting the kingdom because people would look at me. I couldn't have this discussion with you up until, I'd say, December of this past year, because I would get so worked up, I wouldn't be able to kind of keep my frustration out of the picture. Right now, I came to an act of forgiveness. Doesn't mean I still don't want him to be accountable for his actions and how he's hurt people, but now I'm also, I'm invested on him not hurting people ever again. And like I said, he doubled down after my sister. He showed up, his new woman showed up at the viewing of my sister, sat with them the entire time. They moved into a house together and were married within probably 4 or 5 months after my sister died. And I can prove that they were in a phone relationship after my sister's first suicide attempt. So it took a lot of me fighting for forgiveness, consulting with different pastors, and really a lot of that didn't move me forward. It was just all of a sudden one day I looked at everything in a different way and a sense of peace came over to me and said, I can do this. I can forgive them and move forward. And from that day on, I don't get worked up. My blood pressure doesn't go up. I'm not having visions of, beating him senseless and trying to find him out somewhere in the evening. And like all of that just stopped. So it's the education. It's the accountability of what's happened. It's the Stolen Valor Act, maybe help modify it, change it in some way. And the forgiveness issue is where I'm at right now.
Isn't that something when we lose someone that we love and it's over things that are meaningless, someone whom is just pure evil, and it's really hard, even when you go through challenges and obstacles, and sometimes they can become very traumatizing. And such as yourself, for me, I had gone through being persecuted, misjudged, bamboozled. I mean, you name it, I was on this journey and I did not understand why. And so here I am trying to move forward myself, and I have these big dreams. I have my blueprint and I'm working on this. And I'm steadily for over 12 years dealing with abuse. And the abuse that I had experienced was outside abuse, again, of being persecuted. Misjudged is the biggest one. And I faced a lot of criticism. And from the bottom of my heart, no one would really understand that within these 12 years, I have been where someone tried to run into me or make me run into them, being ran off the road, bullied, followed, you name it, I've been there. But the most horrific one was last year in March of 25. Someone sprayed me, which I called a death spray, because after I was sprayed, my whole body had froze. And here I am just thinking, what is happening to me? But the main thing about me is I mastered, when dealing with trauma or anything of that nature, how to remain calm. And when I got home, I had told my husband, he looked at me and he said, "You look like the red devil." I mean, my skin was red, my eyes were bloodshot red. I looked in the mirror and I couldn't cry. All I know and felt is that someone tried to kill me. And I just remained calm, got in the bath, and did all those type of things. And I accepted, I acknowledged what happened to me. And it just, I guess, and I must say, me being spiritual and me knowing I'm one of God's jewels, it left me. But My point is that I was angry and I wanted to hurt that person.
Oh, yes.
If I ever seen him again,
Yes.
I wanted to hurt that person. Or I wanted to do something where to put him, because it was a man, and I wanted to put him in jail because that's bodily harm. So I understand what you mean, where we have to go into prayer and we have to make sure that we understand that and acknowledge the things that happen to us when we face losing someone or when we face being traumatized ourselves of going through anything that is harmful. So I commend you for that. And I thank God for you being able to overcome the hate and the anger.
Well, I hear, what you're saying is, and what we're talking about is evil. Like, this is different. I try to tell people when I took this on that this isn't about being upset with your sister because she's what somebody would call him a loser. He doesn't contribute. This is about being around somebody in your life that you brought into your life that you can die over. Like, it doesn't get more intense than that. And I tell people, a friend uses this term. She'll talk about someone like my sister. She'll say they got a broken man picker, and I'm thinking that was my sister's history. She had that broken man picker. They would target my sister because she just had a need. I don't know where it came from and how. We had a wonderful dad. My mom had him mental health issues. But she just could not pick the good man. And she this person, I didn't pick up on it early on, but he also he we do believe he attempted to murder his newest sister-in-law because she was on to him. And he was the only one outside of her property when they were in when she and her sister, who was his new target, were inside her house. She was taking things out to move in with him, and they were arguing and fighting for 3 hours. He was the only one who had access to her car. The next day, she was going to New York City. She took her car, stopped at the gas station before she left, and the guy came up to her window and said, "What are you trying to kill yourself?" She said, "Why?" He said, "You never, whoever took your tire off never put the lug nuts back on. They were barely on." And he knew she was getting on the interstate the next day, but there were no cameras. Nobody could prove that. But he does have that potential. He's a coward, but he has that potential to try to stop a story or from getting out. I'm too far ahead of him now, and I say in the book, if he wants to try something like that, she has the money. His new target has the money to do it. They can give that a shot if they want. But the book is out. So there's nothing they can do to stop that at this point. And just looking back at it, and I think I do want the listeners to know we are talking about evil. Your example is about evil. We're not talking about, just typical life events that are stressing us out. And again, this is stuff. And from a brother's perspective and a male perspective, if you have women in your family, whether they're daughters, sisters, grandmothers, mothers, when they get into this kind of relationship, and we try to confront it, and they say, "Shut up, it's none of your business." What I come to believe is it is our business, because you
Absolutely.
brought someone into this family's life now that we're stressed over. You don't see it because he's meeting a need of yours. You're lonely, you're accepting all of these other things, but we see it. And I tell people at the end of this story, what I come out feeling is, had I not at least tried everything that I tried to protect her after her first suicide attempt, and when she was in the hospital, that was the time to try to get a team together to rescue her from him. That failed, and I'll tell you how it failed. But I tried. So when she said, "Shut up, this is none of your business, this is between," no, it is. because you brought this into the family. You brought so much pain now by making that decision that we have a right to say something. Now, we all may say it in a different way, but I tell you, if I didn't try right now and my sister was gone, I'd be saying, what if I said something? Now, it didn't work, but there was no way, there'd be no way for me to know that if I didn't try something. So I tell people, try to be compassionate, try to say it in a way that you may be able to, don't say it out of anger. But when someone's life is at risk in so many different ways with the people they bring into it, it affects your family and loved ones, and we have a right to say something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that was my next question to you, Mr. Wilson, your, about your sister killing herself in 2022. My condolences go out to you and your family as well. And I thank you for sharing a little bit about that. And I want to discuss more because, again, I can relate to what you're saying because I had established my foundation on behalf of my daughter, whom was in a very bad domestic violence relationship. And what she failed to understand, which right now that's what I teach, is about taking accountability for yourself. Because when you don't take accountability for yourself, then you have the mothers, the fathers, the brothers, the sisters taking accountability for you. And then here we are out here fighting a battle that can bring harm to us, can lead to different things, but we're not worried about that. We want the safety of the people that we love and our family members.
That's right.
And that is absolutely heartfelt. And so, hearing what you're saying, it sounds like to me, and let me know if I'm wrong, she committed suicide just from the continued trauma she was going through.
Well, in the fall of I didn't know what was happening. When I visited her, I left the career to move back home and take care of my parents. My parents were ailing. This was back in 2011. And I drove all over the lower 48 visiting people with my dog before I got back to our family home. And she was one of my visits. And how I found out about the start of this was he was there, my oldest niece, my sister adopted two young gals. They were 11 and 12 when she adopted them. One of them kind of left the family. The other one was there with them, living in the home. And she was about 20-ish, maybe, when she was with them. And he walks out of the room, and my sister leans into me and she says, David, I can't give real names. I'll say, I call him Judas or the hero. When I say the hero, I put it in quotes in the book. Judas was a war hero. She's leaning into me, and I go, what? And she says, yeah, he was in a he was in a battle, and they were killing all of his friends, and they were using 55 caliber bullets that they were illegal in war, and he was seeing all of his buddies get killed, and he rushed that gun's nest, and he killed him, David, and he saved a lot of lives too. And I'm looking at her, and I'm going, like I said, we knew the family, we're friends. My brother's still best friends with his one brother. And I said, I don't think so. And she got upset with me, but she didn't want to make a big scene because he'd be coming back into the room at any moment. She says, you have to promise never to tell anybody that story here. So anyway, I told my brother this, and he said, no, he's been telling people that for years. So I blew it off. And that was a, if I have a regret, the fact that I blew it off and didn't think anything else of it, that was in 2011. Fast forward to the fall of 2020, she started breaking down. Like, she was having a lot of health problems. And again, looking back at it, where does stress and all kinds of problems in your life that are stressful, where does that attack the most? Your gastro. My
Absolutely.
sister's gastrointestinal functioning was horrible, and she was going back and forth to hospitals and getting. She was a mess, but She started emailing me and we started talking on the phone about what was going on, and that she caught him cheating on her, he steals from her, does all this kind of stuff, and she was raising his kids, a couple little girls, twins, and like a 9-year-old, 2 or 3 year olds, and she got them when they were 2 or 3, and then the other one was, the older was like 7. So in 2011, yeah, they didn't have them yet at that point. They got them a couple years after that. I'm sorry, I got a little bit lost in that. I was answering a question and I can't remember what the question was. So, oh, her gas, so she her health was breaking down, and she's telling me all these things and emails and texts and stuff, and she's going to give him an ultimatum, and these conversations are going on, and I'm in the home and I'm taking care of my dad. My mom's in a nursing home. It's just me and my dad. And the last text came in about mid-December. We talked, and I have a lot of them. And she went dark all of a sudden, not answering her phone, not responding to the texts. And I'm sitting there watching TV with my dad, and then I open up my emails just for a late night check before we turned in. And there's a suicide letter. I'm reading the suicide letter on my email. I didn't tell my dad what was happening. I left the room and I went to my computer in my bedroom. I found the police department in her area, the sheriff's. I called them. I said, "I just got this message. Here's the address." I called my niece up now, who was my oldest niece, was living with somebody else at that point down there. And I said, "Get over to the house and start yelling for your mother." And she's saying, why? And I'm telling her, just get over there now. And so, long story short, there, the police found her in the woods and she was still alive. She actually shot herself in the heart, but it ricocheted off a rib bone and it just nicked her heart. So she survived it. She was in bad shape, but she survived it. And it was during that period that I thought, like, if I can't get people in our corner now, like the domestic abuse investigator, the hospital social worker, the hospital administration, everybody, if I couldn't keep him away from her during that period, it was going to be over. So for 5 days, my battle went on for 5 days. The domestic abuse investigator isn't returning my calls. The one lady, the one corporal, was saying, "David, I've given her everything. She'll get back with you. She's not getting back to me." And every hour that he is sitting in there with her, now she's pretty unconscious, but I'm worried about when she starts coming out of it, because what would happen was, if we don't intervene, if I don't get people believing this story and what's going on, they will think that he's the most wonderful husband and father that they've ever met in that hospital ever, because he's that good. This is why he's good at what he does. The domestic abuse investigator responds to about my fifth or sixth call on day 2.5, maybe, angry. "Why are you calling me like this?" She goes, "I got everything you sent me." And I said, "Well, I'm sending it to you because I want us to try to keep him away from her when my sister comes out of this, so she's not exposed to that pressure." And she's, "Well, why don't you come down here if you think it's so bad?" I said, "I'm taking care of my father. He's like 83 years old, 84 years old, having a lot of health problems. I couldn't go down there." But she's mad, her rendition of the story is totally different than mine, but I can prove mine through all my sister's emails. And "Why are you saying these things?" I'm going, "Ma'am, I'm not saying them. I'm using my sister's words. Look at the suicide letter. I sent that to you. It's all in my sister's words, everything he was doing." And she was useless. She actually made things worse. Same with the hospital social workers. I tried to intervene. They said HIPAA. Everybody hid behind HIPAA regulations. I said, "This isn't a HIPAA issue. I had all the, I know what HIPAA is." I said, "I'm not asking you for private information. I'm giving you information in order to protect her." So, long story short, again, it didn't work. And I said, "If you guys can't protect my sister and keep him away from her, she's not going to make it." because she's going to fall right back into that. He's going to be the most wonderful person, and he's going to be everything she thought he could be now. Look at how he's taken care of her. And that's what happened. And I told them all, I said, my sister's not going to make it because this team let her go down. Let this happen. It didn't intervene the way I was asking. And I kept saying, these are not my words. These are things my sister was saying. The only thing my sister didn't give up, she talked about him stealing like her social security checks and all, everything, ruining her credit. But to steal her social security checks, she had to give him permission at some point to cash them. But so he was taking them from her, the cheating on her, the drinking, all of that kind of stuff. The one thing my sister took to her grave was the stolen valor story. That was the thing she could never give up. And she had to believe something, I guess. She hung on to that as, it wasn't just the stolen valor story, and I left this out. It was the PTSD that he got from that fake story. So
I was
he
going to
used the
ask you about
he
that.
used the PTSD. What he would do when she tried to confront him is he'd get all of his guns out, put them on a bed, and say, if you call the state he's on me, there'll be suicide by cop. So when I asked the domestic abuse investigator, I said, didn't you look at those emails? She said, there wasn't a report from that property in 10 years. And I said, well, didn't you see in the report what he would do when she would threaten? And she didn't answer me. She didn't answer me. So my sister wouldn't do that, wouldn't take it forward because she thought that he would kill himself. I mean, he'd never kill himself. He's a coward.
Right.
But he was,
He's narcissist,
I can
actually.
prove it. 95% I can prove that this first suicide attempt, he left the property looking for her. He knew where she was, and he took the twins with him. At that point, the twins are there. You can see the whole backyard. There's windows. She even said, I believe she left her suicide letter where he could find it. Don't come out here looking for me. So, and the tire tracks go through the snow and into the backyard. He drove past all of that. Her lights were on. It was nighttime. Her beams were on, pointing into the woods where she was. You could see the backyard from where they were watching TV in the downstairs. He leaves the property. He only comes back to the property. He parks somewhere down the road. He sees all the police and sheriffs going up to the property. He follows them up. He tells everybody he found her. He had a GoFundMe page trying to raise money and $10,000 for a life flight helicopter. There was no life flight helicopter. And the $10,000 was paid, we believe, by his newest target. So he did get that money. But he also said in his rant that he heard her mumbling in the woods and he ran up and found her in the woods with the police right behind him. Well, the police report has a different story. The police found him. He came into the property after the police and followed some of the police back into the woods. So he's always got to be the victim or the hero or a combination of both. So when
Right.
you try to pick on him, his women, and this is historic, as the one now, they will fight. They will fight to the death to protect his reputation. And the woman that is with, he estranges all the families from his target. And he did that within 3 months. This new family, he had to ramp it up fast. He had them all estranged from her. And the one sister reached out to me. And I said, this is how he acts. He estranges them. Because he knows, when he knows that you know the truth and you're not buying the BS, he starts putting pressure on, like my sister was. All the women before him, I only know of the family, one family before him. He destroyed them, and that wife died young of cancer. Again, I believe stress was involved in that. Cancer feeds off of stress too. That's why they'll tell you get all the stresses out of your life. That woman couldn't get the stressor out of her life, right? So then my sister couldn't get it out, right? Now the new target, is an absolute mess, we're sure. So the other thing that I saw, he took a picture of my sister when she was recovering from the suicide thing. He didn't know what I was up to at that point, because at that point I decided to take a stand. The information at the bottom of the hospital bed showed how much my sister weighed. When I last saw my sister, she was tall. She was 150 pounds, and she carried it very well because she was tall and very just radiant. 253 pounds at the time of her
Ooh.
suicide attempt. When she actually killed herself, which would be about a year and a half later, she was probably closer to 300 pounds. Her body was just destroyed. And I can prove it in her actual suicide. He knew it the day before. He reported to the police that she came October 27th. They got in an argument at a KOA campground where he was put by his construction boss. And he admitted that she came the night before and told her she was going to kill herself. He never called the police. This is a woman who attempted suicide a year and a half prior, looks at him and says, "I'm going to kill myself." He goes, "And I believe there was another woman there. I can't prove that, but I believe there." He said she was mad, left mad because he was drinking. She wouldn't have done that because he was drinking. I believe she caught him. And I believe it's she left that message that she was going to kill herself. So he had to admit that she told him that because the police would find out about it. So he knew she was going to kill herself on the afternoon of the 27th. He reported to the next day. And the next day they found her in a hotel room. She had killed herself on the 27th, like the day she told him. So he knew to me in both events, he gave her extra time to die in both events. So that's the other, that's the epitome of evil in this story, is how he did that.
It is evil. And I know you touched a little bit about this, and I'm going to go back over it again a little bit because people need to really be aware about the situations when people are crying out, and especially our leaders and people whom are in authority to help do something about different situations. And I was inspired reading your biography. Again, it is a heartfelt story. And I was going to ask you to tell me about the woman's sister whom reached out to you because she heard things. Tell me a little bit more about this experience because it's interesting when a family member of someone and they're interested of knowing exactly what happened because, like you said, he could be putting this story out, but when you're looking at a narcissist or a serial person whom has some kind of schizophrenic disease, a person whom is evil, it's got to be something wrong.
Well, the one of the social worker at the hospital after her first attempt, I was opening up, I was exposing him, and she said, they don't people with that issue don't like it when they're outed like that." I said, "My sister just tried to kill herself." Oh, she said, "Well, there's that." Like it's time. Like, yeah, he's a sick dude, but he doesn't get the green light to keep hurting people. Now the sister was leaning on me to tell her what was going on. I said, "Well, he's estranging your sister from her family. That's the process of it. We know that in a very short period of time, he left and he went up there saying he had no money. He had about $45,000 from the sale of the house. He told her she he told the new target that he had no money. She paid for my sister's memorial stone. We believe she paid for the down payment on the house, and she may have bought him a new motorcycle. I know that we're adding up probably in the first year, he got about 125K offer. It's been a lot more since. But the bigger issue that evolved too is we also believe he's sexually abusive to at least one of the girls. He was sexually approaching my elder niece when she was living in the house, and he is not a parent. Like you and I would understand a parent. He never parents any of his children. He targets his women. He gets his women to parent his children. He doesn't have a father-daughter relationship. And here's the thing that nobody knew in that police department because I didn't want to put them on the defensive. I got three graduate degrees. I got everything but a PhD in counseling and school psychology, in the human services. But I thought if I said that, they would get more defensive. So I kept that out of it. But everything that I did, I used my, even when I was trying to get them to intervene, like I understood the HIPAA laws. I understood, how someone like him can take advantage of and manipulate, deceive, and control somebody. And I knew all those dynamics. I just couldn't get that domestic abuse investigator had the skill set of a bad intern. Like she just should not have been doing that. We've had interns, because I was supervising interns when I was in college. We had interns we had to let go. They didn't belong in the program. It wasn't for them. They could not make the human service connection with the work. And I sent books to them. And here's the thing. I even said, I don't want you to fire her. I said, that's not what I'm asking, but she needs supervision and she needs education. I said, that's my goal. And I have all that in writing. And the same with the hospital system. I knew what HIPAA is about. You people blew it. You hid behind HIPAA, so you didn't have to do anything that was questionable. There's a clause in HIPAA. There's a statement about intervening. I won't be able to find it right now, but you can intervene if you believe the person and the patient is at risk of something. And they could use that clause to help my sister. But most of them didn't even know what I was talking about, even the hospital administrator when I was telling them that. So, we tried everything, that we could. But with this new family, it's bigger than Stone Valley. Like when he was in his early 20s, he was telling people he was a brain surgeon. When he lost his career, he was a radiology technician. He did have that degree. While he was in the service, he got that degree. But he was casting himself off as a neuropsychologist, a doctor. He ended up working construction, and he had everybody on the construction site calling him Doc for years. That construction boss, I wanted to talk to him after my sister's death, and he wanted to talk to me. And he was the one that told me. He goes, he was having everybody call him Doc. Are you telling me that he wasn't a doctor or anything? I just started laughing. I said, no, he's not a doctor. He doesn't have a PhD either. But he was giving them, he'd ask them what their ailments were, and he would give them his opinion on all of the things that they were dealing with, right? So, like I said, he was telling people there, you'll go back in his records and you'll see neuropsychologist. I mean, he played it all up. He was the inventor. Did you ever see the naval aircraft carriers? When the jets land, they use a, it's like a giant rubber band to slow them down. And then they use it to help catapult them off the thing. He invented that. It was invented about 40 years, back in the late 1940s or 50s was when it was first invented. And they kept building on it. So he would say all those kinds of things. He brought in a bunch of tin badges once and he threw them on the table of his new target. And the sister said, they're not real. And what he would do was, when the sister would challenge him in front of his new target, he would run into the bedroom. And the sister would go in after him, his new target, and she'd come out and she'd start fighting with the sister, saying, you don't believe him and you're hurting his feelings and you're doing this. This is what they would do. And the sister just couldn't see him. You could see the glaze over their eyes, like my sister. They just saw this hero, and he was a damaged hero because he had PTSD. How dare you pick on him and say this? He's a hero. And he has everybody convinced that if it ever comes out, the government would not acknowledge it. They would not acknowledge anything because it was super secret, double super secret operations. Nobody will ever know. It's crazy.
That is crazy. In your opinion, why empowering others matters more now than ever pertaining to your story?
Right, because educating people what this looks like, stolen valor can be you're sitting at a bar and somebody, generally usually a male, sitting there starts telling you about something great that he did in the military, and they get a free drink. He just stole $5 from you. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have to look at it differently. First off, true heroes rarely ever tell the story about themselves.
Right.
They don't initiate that story. Most of them will talk military with you and they'll never even tell you that story. Their story comes out from other people that served with them. So if somebody starts telling you about an act of military heroism that they did, your red flags have to go up. And that could be anywhere. I mean, you can be out at a supermarket, you can be at a picnic, and all of a sudden you start talking to somebody and they do the same thing. Now, they target, like, they watch for certain things in women. My sister told me in 2009, or no, in 2008, I think it was, she said, "I'm not going to be single one more. Next year, I will not be single." And I said, "Sarah, you can't talk like that. Because there's no way you can know that, and you'll get yourself in a bad situation thinking that way." And that's who she ended up with. So you can't, they see loneliness and desperation, and it's almost through every woman. You look at the MO, loneliness and desperation. And when you have those two factors coming in together, all you see is a beautiful person, and he's a hero too. You just struck relational lottery. You know what I'm saying? You won that, you got the big prize. And then that's how they start the relationship. And as the relationship unfolds and they see what his PTSD does to him, it makes him cheat on them, it makes him drink, makes him do all these different things. And then now you have to swallow it because now he's still a big, beautiful hero. But now he has all these other problems that you can't leave him for. You have to help him because he's a military hero. And you just have to work with it. You have to, the cheating and the drinking, all of that's a part of his problem. You got to be patient. And he just breaks them. And I look at my sister, and so you have to watch for those kind of cards to be called. Even if somebody else tells a woman the story about him, you still can't. You have to go into all of those stories just saying, maybe it's true, maybe it isn't. And it's sad, but a true veteran will say, good on you. Always be cautious of stories being told like that, because most military heroes are not going to tell those stories. So you always have to be cautious about hearing those stories out in the open. They don't even like other people telling those stories. When you hear the military folk talk, they don't do it. So the fact that you're hearing it from either that person or for some other people, I would be cautious, put your red lights up. And it doesn't always have to be like the case like my sister's, where it ended in a suicide attempt, and he broke her. He simply broke her. And in the end, she couldn't take it anymore, and I couldn't get anybody to help intervene. And then he just simply replaced her. So you have to, as I think, as women with relational challenges, all I could say is really look at yourself. Because the other thing I tackle near the end of the book is my sister would believe that her daughter that was killed was the best thing in her life, was the most important thing in her life. But in the end, she made a decision and put a very inappropriate, immature husband ahead of my sister, ahead of my niece. And that's a tough pill to swallow, because in the end, what she said was she wasn't the most important. When with the twins, she would say they're the most important thing in her life. But in the end, they weren't the most important thing in life. And I had a neighbor, an elder neighbor, that lost her child many years ago. And when I went to tell her what happened with my sister, she looked at me and she said, "Well, David, she lost a child though." And what that meant was, she didn't say another word. What that meant was, she lost a child, but she killed herself over a dude. So when you see that, and this is what it's a gut check to women who are prone to being with the bad guys, and they have children, and they have to be married. They have to get this guy. I got to get this guy in the house because there'll be a father. No, You got to protect your children from anybody you're dating for quite a while before you invite them into your home. You know, and
Absolutely.
you have to see if they have parenting skills. You know, you can't just do that, but you have to understand they have to. It's a, like I said, it's a really difficult gut check because I'm coming right out and saying it. Women who buy into this stuff and allow these men in their life and have children, your children are, you're saying it, your children are the most important things in your life, but you're not acting it out. You're putting this guy up here. And in the end, that guy's going to win out if you let it go on long enough. It won out against my sister twice in her life with her marriage when she was with my niece. And he wasn't a biological dad. My sister got pregnant very young, and the guy didn't refuse to admit it. But, you know, it's a tough discussion because I put a few examples in near the end of the book about here's a few other women that I knew that had this same issue that keep saying that that children are the most important thing in their life, but these guys keep winning out in the end.
They do. And I totally agree with you. I look at what's going on now, and especially in Hollywood, how a lot of women just sit up and have kids by men, different fathers and everything of that nature, just to have income. And especially men that are celebrity themselves. And it's sad. And sometimes, you have to look at that. And through my program, that is what I teach and I instill and I advocate is about be your own self-advocate. And what is wrong with you making lots of money yourself? What is wrong with you establishing yourself financially? So you don't have to fall into that category where sometimes you can meet men who have a lot of money, and that's what they do. They are purchasing you. And when they start purchasing you, that's when it comes with rules and regulations, and you have to do what they say. And then here comes the abuse. Because what that sh has been shown is you lack self-esteem and confidence. And you don't realize it because you want this man that one, he's hiding behind the valor, I'm going to call that, of being handsome. Two, he has all this money and you can overlook what's really that darkness about him because a lot of times when you deal and you meet men, something about their past comes up in the relationship because you're going to talk about it. And he tends to always blame what happened in the relationship on the woman. You know what I mean? And so you have to really look and read between the lines because those are red messages. Those are
Well,
red flags.
and the gift of someone like this guy that I'm talking about, they have the gift whether they have money or not. Like what he's able to do to women, he had a good, the radiology tech was a good job. But he lost the job. And here's what he told my sister. I didn't realize he wasn't working as a radiology tech. He was working in construction for 5 years. I said, what happened to his hospital job? Oh, David, you wouldn't believe what they did to him. The doctor made a mistake in a surgery and the patient died. And he called everybody in his office after it was over and said, if you don't say this, that this happened and it wasn't my fault, I'll easily be fired. And she said, David, he couldn't do it. He couldn't sign that form. And I'm going, no, that isn't what happened. You know what I'm saying? Like there's always that he was a hero victim there. Look what I did. I couldn't listen to the bad doctor. It's always a story. He never has money. That's why, like, we don't know what he does with it, if he has private accounts. But like I said, he came back north where we're living and him and this woman got to, he can't leave, by the way, because he's on parole. He got involved in a little conflict that I made sure the judge had all the information. And rather than them just giving him a slap on the wrist, he gave him a year or 90 days with the ankle bracelet and 5 years probation. So he has to stay back in our area where we're all from. That's where they got the house. But he, like I said, he had at least, he got $10,000 from that woman that he's living with now. He got $45,000 from the sale of the property, but he never has the money. So we don't know what he does with it. He has secret accounts or whatever, but he constantly sucks off of the women and he
The
just takes
women.
their money. So to have that gift, and this is true evil, right?
Right.
You can just make a regular paycheck if you want, but what he ends up doing is if the women are making money, he'll just quit and he'll just take the money that they're making. And
Narcissist.
this woman he's with now makes a lot of money. So there's a lot going on there now that I'm aware of some of it. But basically he's still doing the same thing. So like if he got word that I was going to forgive him and that it got to that level, but he refused. As I said, ask him if he wants to talk with me. He refused it. But even then, he's still doing it. So my goal is to still try to intervene to stop it, to get him to be accountable. We know he's going to be accountable in the next life, but I'm also called to do what I can to try to stop that behavior because he keeps destroying families and children.
Absolutely. So my next question for you is, what is the one thing about military life that surprises you from this whole entire story?
Well, I happen to have worked with children for many, many years. And what I've always been amazed by is in the military life, the military lifestyle, raising a family with children. Children have to become very resilient because of the moves. So a military family, somebody that's, does a career in the military, as children are growing up from babies to their high school year, they may have been in four or five different states or countries, but yet the military does something very right with families. They support families and and maybe they have, courses and classes for these parents to take because they're going to be moving their children around. But I've never really crossed paths with a military child who is adversely affected by that. On the other side of that, they actually developed very mature behaviors with moving because they're either they stayed in touch with some of their better friends over the years and they kept in touch with them. But most families now, separate of the military, who jump around like that, in my experiences that I'm telling you, probably 35, 40 years of being around children and families, rarely seen those children come out of it in a healthy way, like the military family, the kids did. So I think the family support models in the military work very well.
So my next question, following that question, is what do you wish more people understood about veterans or military life?
Well, I wish that everybody can understand what military, what stolen valor is. Let me read, I had this, let me read the definition. So what stolen valor does, it dishonors a genuine service. When someone falsely claims military honors or awards, they diminish the sacrifices and bravery of those who actually serve. That's one. Secondly, it erodes trust. Stolen valor can lead to skepticism among legitimate veterans and their experiences, making it harder for genuine service members to be believed. Now, that one I take a little bit issue with because true veterans will want you to be cautious when you start hearing
Absolutely.
stories, but they can have that effect. Then, genuine security risks. In some cases, stolen valor can pose security risk if the imposters gain access to sensitive information or positions of authority. So what they're saying there is if you are a military vet and you're giving up information about some of the things, while you were a vet, openly in public, that you shouldn't be, just to raise your elevate your status. I don't take those first two as much as I do that first one. It dishonors genuine service, is
Absolutely.
what it does, and it elevates a fake. It elevates a fraud, but so I would want most people to understand that. Get to know what stolen valor is. Be cautious. If you hear a story, don't automatically be like, when you're talking to the person, assume it. Let other veterans talk to them, because another veteran can have that discussion with them and pick out stolen valor like that. That's a
Right.
way to uncover it. If you know somebody, if you're in a social circle and you know some true veterans, and you hear that one of them is telling this story, tell another one of your veteran friends. And they'll start asking him questions. And usually what happens, if they're lying, they back away and they leave. They have to go. Excuse me, I got to leave early. Or they won't know how to answer the questions. So I would always access someone that you know is a true veteran and let them know what you're hearing about this person, and then let them figure it out for you. That's probably the safest way.
Were you or have you been in the military yourself?
I was. I was and I wasn't. Here's the interesting thing. I joined when I was very young, and I got out during basic training. They recycled me twice. I found out while I was in there from a captain in the kitchen. I told him what kind of school I intended on getting while I was in the service, and he basically said, "You'll never get that amount of time to get that much school out of the way while you're in the service." I said, "But that's what I was told by my recruiter." And he said, "You won't get that much time." And I just kind of said, I can't do this." But they kept telling me, told my drill sergeant I didn't want to be there anymore. They're not automatically going to say, "Okay, you can go home." He said, "You're doing a good job." He said, "I think, just stick around a while and you'll adjust to this." Well, I wasn't adjusting to it, and I kept saying I don't want to be here. They actually put me in basic training twice, and probably midway through the second training, I was starting to break down. Like, I just don't want to be here, And I got out, and it's not dishonorable, or it's just a general discharge. It doesn't hurt you. But a lot of people, and there were people in my same platoon that were attempting suicide to get out. And it's like, I just held my ground and said, I don't want to be here, because I was lied to. But that experience did not make me think about the military in a less way.
Right.
I have even more admiration for it, because I saw the front end of it on what people have to sacrifice to stay in. You know what I'm saying? It actually helped me. Like, I was the anomaly. I was the one that, you want to say, couldn't make it. It just wasn't for me. And it wasn't wartime. It was peacetime. But I end up admiring them more, the people that stuck it out. You know what I mean? So I didn't walk around telling everybody, making up a story on, I was in, and I was doing expert and everything that they were challenging me with. I just didn't want to be there anymore. No. I failed at it, in essence. In the bigger scheme of things, I failed at it. So I came out of it with even a more healthy respect for what our people in service do, going through basics and handling it and doing it.
Absolutely. I had two people from my family that was in the military. My cousin, he spent like all his life in the military. He loved it. And my nephew, he got out of the military. I think that he couldn't handle it. And I don't know exactly what he did, but I got word that he either broke his leg or something of that nature, but he happened to get released out of or discharged out of the military. And you have to look at that because the military is not for everyone. And I
Right,
know the way
right.
that they lure you in. Me and my grandson was just talking about this because he's 17 and the military center is like down the street from the school, right? So they come to the school and they talk to the guys and the girls about military, and they offer a lot of different resources, which is good. However, you just have to make sure that you understand what you're really getting into. I think everything that we do, sometimes you have to do research. And me and research, that's my friend, because anytime I want to create something, establish something, or do anything, I'm a research fanatic. And that's only because I like to make sure that I understand what I am getting into.
Well, I was,
I say yes, I want to go for it.
Well, I was six. I'm in my upper 60s now. So back in the day, I think recruiters used to get away with a lot of the storytelling. I don't think they can get away with some of the things that they used to do.
Right.
That now I think it's far more truthful, and there's a lot of, I think, ways that they just don't. They don't tell some dishonest kind of things. I think back then, they had a lot more leeway on how they got people to sign the paper. But like I said, I developed a healthy respect. My dad was Korean wartime vet. My uncle was in the National Guard. My two nephews were both in Afghanistan and Iraq. I had a cousin that was in Vietnam. Like, it's in through my family. So to me, based on my experience with this guy, and it's like, I want to protect the honor of the true heroes in the military. I mean, that's another, that's the part about educating. We want to protect our true heroes, and
Absolutely.
while doing that, there's these other things that are going to happen too. And no, by the way, I found somebody out of the blue on a Stolen Valor Facebook site. This guy says, David, I think I could help you. So we start talking on Messenger. And then by phone, and he was a military vet that worked with the FBI on some of the more egregious cases that they hear about. He wanted to take mine on. And military records are very, very well protected. You can't get access to them. Within 10 minutes, he came back and he said, here's why he was discharged. We always thought it was a sexual impropriety off base with a minor, because we heard that story, and that was in his family, that story. But he actually received a bad conduct discharge for drugs. So they
So,
probably didn't have enough facts with the sexual incident with the minor off base, but they had the facts with the drugs. So he was booted with the bad conduct discharge. And it gets a little grainy, because even when people get those kind of discharge, they can still leave with some services. But I don't believe he gets either any or he gets hardly any military services. My sister for many years was saying, when we go to counseling, like, he could, for his PTSD, when we in the end, as I'm reading her emails and her suicide letter and her text, all these kind of things, she's saying, when he comes home, when he goes to counseling, and when he comes home, he's a mess. All of a sudden, I realized that all those years when she was saying, like, we go to this, because I was saying, like, I don't think he ever went to a counseling session. And it didn't come out until she actually said that in her suicide letter, when he comes home from counseling. But she was leading me to believe that she was right there doing all of, she was leading me to believe that she had all of his military papers, and she saw the things that says he's a hero, but she never did. She
Never did.
never, she, she,
The
she
things
never
that are
did.
covered up, the things that are covered up, I tell you.
And she took that with her
You had a
grave.
very
And the sad
firm.
thing about his new target is, I look at her, I see my sister. And that was one of my forgiveness moves. And I almost got drug out of the court hearing where I was going to the court cases he was involved in. And that takes us down a different path, but it's in the book. But I looked at her, and I upset her by something that I did in the courtroom toward him. And I just said, that's my sister. It's the same. They're just a target to him. They all have the same personality makeup and desperation. And she was desperate. Her sister was saying she's been lonely. Like they lived together for many years. They were best friends, these sisters, until he came into the scene. But
Right. Well, I commend you. I am totally inspired. I know we're up for time. So can you tell everyone how can someone contact you if they want to discuss or have you on their show or and purchase your book?
Well, I'll just show you what the book looks like. I think I get
Yes, I
that's
love it. Yes, I
so
like it.
all the names, locations, and names. So you're on a different part of the country. I didn't mind saying, you introduced me by my real name, but as I get better at this, I'm going to say just call me Michael, that name right there. But I
Oh,
don't worry about it too much. Like I said, I was told even by that veteran through his FBI resources that I didn't have to change all the names and locations. But like I said, I didn't want another veteran getting himself in trouble for doing something. So, and I actually be through the forgiveness stuff, I don't want to see him harmed in that way. I want to see his behavior stop where he stops hurting people. But so if you get the book through authorhouse.com, it's self-published. I've done other books through self-publishing. This is the hardest book to write because there are so many feelings associated with it, and
Absolutely.
the grieving and the anger and everything. But authorhouse.com, and you just plug in Blood Fake, and I think Blood Fake comes up, and the word Blood Fake is in blue, and that's actually what you click on, and you'll get to the book to buy the book. But if
Okay.
you get it at the authorhouse.com, you will see on the site there's an information email at the top hand corner to contact the author. So you can, once you get on that and you buy it, you'll see that there's a place for you to get in touch with the author, and then I'll just be checking that every week or so to see if there's any people interested in.
Yeah.
And I think
Book,
with
it
your
should,
system there,
and I'm hoping that, I'm sorry.
with the BBS, with your the what is it, the BSS, BBS
Yeah,
Broadcasting
BBS Radio.
Network. Yeah, so I think my information is with them as well in the larger picture. But word of mouth, I think, Ms. Henderson is going to be, I think, is always very valuable because it's coming from people that heard the story directly. Or they like and respect you, or they like the way I told the story. I think that's always going to be very powerful. So I ask
Absolutely.
people even who watched it if they're interested in it and purchase the book, or just tell other people about the book. You'd
Well, the
be
book to me,
surprised.
yes, you're absolutely right. The book to me is a word of mouth book because it is something that women have and are going through, and it's a wake up call, and it's something that can enlighten you. And so for me, I would want the book to be on my shelf in my foundation because a lot of different young girls that I meet and they go through trauma. A lot of them have men, boyfriend trauma. It's a good book to really sit back, to have a discussion, to read. And so you can get some greater insight about what happened to someone else.
Yes,
Because the
yes.
best experience is when someone else then went through an experience and can share with you.
This is the
So with
loving message. This is the loving message because I get very direct coming down the home front, the end of the book is these women are being tar they're being targeted. It's not a healthy relationship. For a parent, a mother to say, this guy thinks that my boyfriend is more important than my girls. And I am saying there's a high possibility of that. And I'm saying you've got to check yourself. And here's the loving message behind that. You there?
yes, I'm here. We're up for time.
Okay. The message is they're generally very nice people. You deserve better. These
Absolutely.
women deserve better.
So with that being said, I have reached my destination. And I leave you with this quote. Courage is contagious when a brave man takes a stand. Until next time, do have a blessed day. And
You
I'll see
also.
you next week.
You also.
Cheers.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to All Roads 65 Max Radio with Pamela Henderson. Join us every other week on Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on BBS Radio Station 1. And please visit allroads65max.org and become a volunteer or sponsor and be the change you want to see in this world. With your help, we can make a difference in our society and uplift those who so desperately need our help. Thank you for tuning in.